Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Health Information Technology Advisory Committee meeting. We have an exciting agenda today, looking at our final recommendations on the Trust Exchange Framework and Common Agreement, as well as a couple of other updates from our USCDI and ISP task forces. So with that, I will do a brief roll call before we get started. Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Robert Waugh. I do believe he's on. Michael Adcock.
Present.
Christina Caraballo.
Present.
Tina Esposito. Not yet. Cynthia Fisher.
Present.
Valerie Gray.
Here.
Anil Jain.
Good morning.
John Kansky.
I'm here.
Ken Kawamoto.
I'm here.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Leslie Leonard. Not yet. Okay. Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Cindy McComb.
Present.
Clint McDonald. Not yet. Okay. Aaron Meary. Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Josh Ratwani.
Good morning.
Steve Reedy.
Present.
Sasha Termot.
Good morning.
Andrew Trescott? Not yet. Okay. Cheryl Turney?
Good morning.
Denise Webb? Not yet. Okay. Laura Kahn? Kate Goodrich? Terry Adarim? Ram Sharam?
Present.
Jonathan Becker? Okay. We'll circle back and hopefully others will join. With us from ONC, we also have Dr. Rucker, Elise Sweeney-Anthony, Steve Posnack, and Seth Zielinski. At this point, I will turn it over to our national coordinator, Dr. Rucker, for a few remarks.
Yeah, hi, everyone. Hope everybody's recovered from their July 4th activities. Want to thank folks for getting to the final set of draft recommendations on the Trusted Exchange Framework. Concept. In particular, I want to thank John Kansky and Arian Malik for leading the TEFCA task force and look forward to getting your thoughts there. Also would like to welcome Dr. Jonathan Ebeker to the HITECH. Jonathan is currently the acting CMIO for the VA and has been working in healthcare IT for a long time. So look forward to getting his contributions. A general reminder, we have our third annual interoperability forum, August 20th to 22nd, I know some of you will be there. For folks, the basic concept of this forum is to try to address and get further insight on, you know, what are the, you know, the hardest issues in interoperability. I think everybody knows it, or, well, I think many people know, certainly from a public point of view, it's good, but obviously there are a bunch of challenges. So dissecting those out is really what the interoperability forums are all about. And so anyway, that's it on my end. I'll turn it over to Carolyn and Robert, though. I think Robert may be having audio difficulties, so I'll turn it over to Carolyn.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Rucker. Welcome, everyone, and good morning. Let us all share our appreciation for your dialing in on summer vacation. We normally try to take a break so everyone can get out and do some fun things. We really appreciate your coming back to go through the TEFCA recommendations this morning and look at a little bit of other business. So I'll start by reviewing the agenda briefly. We will begin with our Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement draft recommendations, and we do need to vote on those today. John Kansky and Arian Malik and the task force have done a tremendous amount of work, and we have a really good presentation and I think an opportunity for excellent discussion this morning. We will also have a couple of updates, first from Christina and Terry. on the U.S. core data for interoperability phase two task force, and then from Ken and Stephen with the interoperability standards priorities task force update. So with that, I will ask for a vote on the meeting minutes from the June 19 meeting. All those in favor of approving those minutes, please state aye.
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 And are there any opposed to approving the minutes? And are there any abstentions? All right. The meeting minutes from the June 19 meeting have been approved. I will now pass the mic to Robert.
Thank you, Carolyn. Good morning, everyone. Again, thanks for using part of your summer for this important work, and we appreciate everyone's engagement. We assume everyone got the batches of materials again and has had a chance to review them, the things that we're going to go over today. I think we'll go straight into the TEFCA draft recommendations. As we all know, these are due soon, so we want to go ahead as a committee to review and approve the committee's hard work that has been led by John and Arian. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to John and Arian to go through the brief that has been sent out already.
Good morning.
Morning.
So the way we're doing this morning is I'm going to be doing the play-by-play. John is doing the color commentary. We've got our recommendations organized by sections. So I think, Carolyn and Robert, I think the plan is for us to pause at each section, get feedback, and go to formal voting. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to organize this. It's been successful in the past. I think we'll keep with that.
Excellent. Good. Okay. So this is our overall agenda. Just remind everybody about the membership, the overall charge, and then dive into the final recommendations. So let's keep going. Just as a reminder, these were the members of the TEFCA task force. We've been very fortunate in having consistent and active membership from the first TEFCA task force to the same group that's been reviewing TEFCA 2. And we really thank them for their work, their incredible recommendations, and the engagement that they showed through a little bit of a death march to get to this final set of recommendations. So for anybody who's listening, as well as for posterity, just a profound thanks for this group. Let's go on to the next slide. All right, so our charge was to review the TEFCA Draft 2 and make recommendations in the following areas. And we will go through these areas section by section. So our first, if we go to the next slide, our first goal was to make overall recommendations or overall overarching recommendations. So recommendation one is just to look at what is the TEFCA and what is it designed to do. There's a specific charge that Congress gave in the Cures Act relative to ensuring cross network exchange. We felt it was important to balance or to express the broader policy aims of better treatment, quality of care, and a more efficient health system, and felt it was important for that to be both the policy goal and the success criteria for the TEFCA. And then we really looked at the value proposition for QHIN and participants members joining overall over the umbrella common framework and common agreement, and felt it was important to balance adoption of new requirements with existing frameworks and networks to make sure that the TEFCA is appropriately adopted, and that ONC establish both carrots and sticks so that there's appropriate incentive for participants, participant members, and QHINs. That can include bully pulpit tools like education outreach, coordination with existing frameworks, any funding opportunities. In particular, making sure that there's appropriate incentive for participants and participant members to participate in the TEFCA. You'll see in our later comments that we believe that addressing 21st century cures information blocking mandates and requirements probably should be the easiest and most direct value proposition. We do think there could be additional value propositions. That's recommendation number one. If we go to the next slide. So with respect to the interoperability rule and in particular the information blocking requirements, we are asking ONC to align the TEFCA with the rule. And that goes to key definitions like HIE, HIN, EHI. So just kind of a block and tackle perspective. And then we discussed the relationship between the TEFCA and the forms of exchange that the TEFCA permits or enables and information blocking. And we recognize that there is much more to appropriately accessing, exchanging, and using electronic health information than the cross-network exchange facilitated by the TEFCA. We do believe that that kind of cross-network exchange is an important way that information will be exchanged, and we believe that active good faith participation exchange should address and be evidence for compliance with the relevant information blocking requirements. We don't believe, from the same perspective, that it's only a portion of information exchange activities. We don't believe that TEFCA participation alone should be a formal exception or create a safe harbor. And we also don't believe it should be a condition of maintenance and certification requirements for the information blocking condition, but it should be the easiest and most direct path to address those relevant requirements. So that's recommendation two, which is really about alignment to the information blocking requirements. We also looked at the notion that information blocking requires, and Congress in 21st Century Cures requires all information to be exchanged, accessed, and used. The TEFCA mandates that the USCDI be the target of exchange. I know there's many comments out there relative to aligning the USCDI with information blocking. With respect to the TEFCA, we believe it's appropriate for ONC to set a floor with the USCDI, and that may mean that there are that in some cases there are some paths of exchange that won't be addressed through the cross-network exchange facilitated by the TEFCA, and that organizations may need to do other activities if they need access to information that's not addressed in the USCDI. As we expand the USCDI, we believe that this issue will get better, but there's substantial value for making sure that the USCDI is addressable through cross-network exchange. And the next slide.
Hey, while we're switching slides, and because you're going through quite a bit of play-by-play here, as you say, just remind everybody that as you want to join the conversation, please use the raise hand function. If you're not on the app, then we'll have to hear you on audio.
Thank you. Let's go back one slide, and that is the overarching recommendations section. So it's a good time to pause, collect feedback, and go to formal vote. John, anything you want to add that I didn't cover in the detailed play-by-play?
No, let's see if there's questions.
Any questions on the first three recommendations? Comments? Christina, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I'm trying to just look at this last bullet in recommendation two, and I am formulating my question. But I just wanted to get some clarity on this one. If it's not required as a condition of maintenance and certification to participate in the TEFCA, I did just have some concerns there. I think we discussed this at the last call and I brought this up, and I do not think that it should be required for vendors to participate necessarily, but I do think that that path for participation and that crossover with live and active sites in participation in the TEFCA should be a requirement. So this one's just kind of a sticking point for me, and I guess I'd like some more clarity because I believe that everybody does need to participate, and I want that to be clear. Like any live active site and any certified technology that's being used in the industry should connect to TEFCA.
Yeah, if it helps, we definitely discussed this in the task force, and our basic belief is that the information blocking rule should be the horse and TEFCA participation should be the cart, that rather than create a ton of programmatics around TEFCA participation, we should focus on making it easy to participate and a natural way to address information blocking. And, you know, to some extent, it creates a presumption that if you're exchanging data with the TEFCA for those relevant portions of exchange, you are addressing your information blocking requirements. If you are not, then you know I think that regulators and other actors would want to look to see if you're not participating in the TEFCA, how else you're doing addressing those forms of exchange, and how you're making your data accessible for access, exchange, and use. So again, the basic thought was let's make sure that information blocking is in the driver's seat, and that the TEFCA is an appropriate and easy way or means to achieve those requirements. Does that help?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I agree with the third bullet that the TEFCA shouldn't be a safe harbor, but I would like a little stronger language that even though it's not a safe harbor and you have to show that you're not information blocking in many ways, you still participation in the TEFCA, I think, is still a fundamental piece of achieving interoperability. So I do think that you've got to have a line to it, even if it's that floor. And I'm concerned at how the way this final bullet and recommendation two is almost saying it's not necessarily required.
Okay. So just as a reminder,
I think we're thinking the same.
Yeah, I think just as in recommendation one, we do note that it's appropriate to include TEFCA in federal contracts as well as CMS programs. Maybe it's appropriate to say participation in TEFCA is an important building block for nationwide interoperability. Information blocking, I'm trying to formulate an amendment as we talk, but it might just be better to frame this recommendation with some of the notions that you're talking about in terms of the TEFCA being an important building block for interoperability. John, can you frame maybe mentally an amendment here that addresses the concerns?
I'm actually going to the transmittal letter and seeing if any of the introductory comments seem to speak to what Christina is saying. The other thing, it's not pushing back against a proposed amendment, but as those on the task force know, there was a lot of balancing of perspectives in the language that we settled on is probably a good way to say it.
But I don't think there would be any objection for saying that the TEFCA is an important pillar of nationwide interoperability.
Should that go in the words of the recommendation or the words before the recommendation, I guess is what I'm saying. Are we editing the recommendation or the transmittal letter?
What are thoughts on striking the should not be a condition of maintenance and certification?
Given the amount of discussion on the task force regarding that, and trying to balance the different perspectives on this one. I think that's a fairly significant change. I don't know what Arian thinks.
Yeah, we had a substantial amount of discussion about this point early on. Basically, the thought process here is, and I actually think that from a regulatory perspective, ONC couldn't make it a condition of maintenance certification because TEFCA by nature is sub-regulatory rather than regulatory, and conditions of maintenance certification would probably need to get done through rulemaking. So I don't actually think this changes the real world that much. I mean, A, it is just a recommendation to ONC, and B, I don't believe it actually changes anything with respect to the voluntary participation in the TEFCA.
I think I have a, what about putting, okay, understood, and I apologize, I tried to join your task force calls, but wasn't able to. What about just putting in here that I think you kind of alluded to it, it should, however, be an easy path. What about having something that as part of certification, a clear path to connect to the TEFCA must be established. And what I'm getting at here is that every certified product has a clear way for their clients to be able to see how they can connect to the TEFCA. And that is documented and very kind of transparent. So where are those connections happening? Would that make sense?
Yeah, so as a just to frame up how ONC was thinking about the TEFCA is primarily a QHIN to QHIN set of exchange standards, and how participant members connect to the QHINs themselves is sort of outside of the technical framework. But you're right, we probably shouldn't be saying that relevant standards are outside of certification, so we don't want to imply that. So, John, what would you think about adding the comment that relevant standards may be appropriate for certification?
Sure, I don't think people would have issue with that.
Yeah.
That helps.
Okay. Christina, would that address your overall desire for clarification?
Yeah, I think so. I just want there to be a clear path and it not to be hidden and easy
okay.
to be able to kind of connect where needed.
Okay, so how about we add at the end of this recommendation that relevant interoperability requirements and standards should be considered for future certification.
So, Arian, I think I hear a amendment to your
Correct.
Recommendation 2 forming here. Is that right?
That's right.
Is that specifically the end of bullet 4?
At the end of bullet 4, correct.
Yep.
At the end of bullet 4, you want to add the words, and I don't think I've got them down.
Yeah, so the words would be relevant relevant standards should be considered for future certification programs, including of QHINs as well as participant members. And again, the point just being that we want to align standards like enabling standards for the US CDI as well as QTF standards as appropriate to certification programs.
But okay, those last words you weren't planning to put in, right? You're planning to put in
correct
after the last bullet on recommendation 2. I'm not sure we can edit this on the fly.
No.
And display it, but I want to make sure everybody understands what you're proposing. You're going to add the words relevant standards should be considered by QHINs and participant members?
Yeah, relevant standards. So let me do another mental editing pass at this. standards relevant for participants, participant members, and QNs should be considered for future rounds of certification.
Okay, you flipped it. Okay.
That's your best version yet. Right?
That's my best version. We're sticking with it.
You started this out on SportsCenter. I don't know what we're doing. Okay. Is everyone clear on the proposed amendment? And Arian, I'm probably going to ask you to repeat it at least one more time to make sure everyone's got it.
I probably should write it down.
But we're talking about on the slide that's currently displayed.
Myself, we could try to get that displayed quickly, or just circle back to that one so everyone can see.
Why don't we circle back? I like that proposal. Why don't we circle back to this issue, and then just presuming that we will get agreement on that particular amendment, it might be worthwhile to look at support for these three recommendations.
All right. So. Let me just entertain any other comments or discussion on these first three recommendations, understanding that we're working on displaying the amendment to recommendation two. Stephen.
I just want to say I think these are well thought out, intuitive, and I support them. And I thank the committee for coming to this point.
Thank you.
Right. Other comments or questions or suggestions for the first three recommendations? Okay. Looks like we're trying to change the presenters to maybe make it possible for Arian to type in. So, Arian, you're on the presenter chat.
Yeah, what? It may take us a couple minutes to get that displayed.
Why don't I send you the draft text, and then we circle back to this rather than try to do it on the fly?
Yep.
I just feel like that's a...
Is it helpful if I type what I heard Arian say in the public chat, or is it?
Sure. So if you could, that's really useful. If you could do that, we can move on with maybe we can get some consensus on these three recommendations and then move on.
Yep. Well, okay. What I'd like to do is
John, right now,
on these first three.
Yeah, John right now is working on the.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. I think it's fine. We'll come back to these three. If you guys look at your app in the lower right corner, there's a presenters chat. You can do it in there because there's only seven of us in that right now.
So John's putting it in the public chat right now. Standards relevant for QN.
No, not okay. All
right. Yeah.
Yeah, Robert, they don't have access to the presenters box.
Yeah. So.
Okay. That's what I heard. That may be a little bit off.
That's completely,
John put it in.
Appropriate. Yep. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then I'm assuming everyone can see the presenter's chat. I'm sorry, the public comment chat where John has just typed the proposed amendment that would go at the end of the fourth bullet of recommendation two that's on the slide that's currently being displayed. Okay, Sasha, you have your hand up?
This is nitpicky, but do we really mean QHINs participants or participant members? The standards could be relevant for one of those groups, not all.
Absolutely fair. And it is nitpicky.
So it's a second order amendment. Let's change the word and to or. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Other comments about this amendment? So I think now what I see on my app is a little box has notes 11 that lists the proposed amendment with the second order amended change as well, which I guess we'll just take as a regular amendment. and that would go at the end of the fourth bullet for recommendation two that you see displayed on the screen. Other comments or questions about this amendment? All right. Hearing none, let's vote as a committee on amending recommendation two with the addition of language that is viewed in notes 11 at the end of the fourth bullet. Is everyone clear on that? Okay. All those in favor of this amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? Okay, so recommendation two is now amended. Let's take a vote on these first three recommendations as amended. And I'll ask for any final comments on recommendations one, two, or three, understanding we've now amended recommendation two. Seeing no other comments on recommendations one, two, and three, let's take a vote. All those in favor of recommendations one, two, and three as amended, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right, great.
Good. All right, let's go on to the next cluster that relates to applicable law. So a little bit of background here. There are a set of requirements in the so-called MRTCs, the mandatory required terms and whatever. I forget what MRTC stands for, but it's the terms and conditions that are required for all QHINs, as well as appropriate pass-throughs to participant and participant members. And these are really the foundational rules that are laid down by ONC as opposed to any additional terms that get added by the RCE and QHINs. And in those MRTCs, ONC basically has recapitulated HIPAA to make sure that there's appropriate coverage for non-covered entities and non-existing BAs to make sure that we apply the key and relevant HIPAA terms. So given all of that, the task force felt it was very important to make it clear that there are some of the terms and conditions in the MRTCs that are repeats of HIPAA obligations extended to cover participant and participant members who are not covered entities or BAs. And then some are new privacy and security obligations that go beyond HIPAA and cover all participants, all QHINs participants, participant members. And so some of those examples are some of the specificity around meaningful choice, the use of EHI outside the U.S., and specific identity proofing and authentication policies. So basically just wanted to make sure that we clarify what's a repeat of HIPAA and what are additional terms and conditions. That flows through to some of our other recommendations. So if we go on to the next page, we noted that most HINs, HIEs, and in some cases, will need to amend terms and conditions with their in their participation agreements with their participants and participant members, and that work, anybody who's been involved in negotiating terms knows that many lawyers are involved, and the experience is somewhat less than pleasant, and with no disrespect to the legal profession. And that it would be desirable to limit or to address these additional terms through amendments and attachments rather than through having to renegotiate wholesale words that may have been lovingly negotiated. So we recommend that MRTCs be addressable through terms and conditions in existing agreements wherever possible, and we provide a suggested set of means that are intended to be illustrative but not constraining. So those means include allowing the RCE to evaluate and approve existing participant agreement or relevant terms of that agreement, and then allowing QHINs with the support of the RCE to do the same thing relative to participant agreements with participants, potentially designate terms and conditions as required versus addressable, so taking a little page from the way that HIPAA is set up. And then in cases where there are hard changes to existing agreements, basically allowing a grace period where TEFCA-based exchange can continue to occur while the QHINs are renegotiating their agreements with existing participants. There are already some forms of cross-network exchange. We believe it's important to bring those into the fold of the TEFCA, but also recognize that there's going to be a period of renegotiation. That's recommendation number five. Recommendation, if we go on to the next page. Nope, that's it. So that's the addressable law, applicable law set of recommendations. Let's pause here for comment and for potential approval.
Okay, thank you. Comments, questions, suggestions for recommendations 4 and 5? All right, I don't see any hands up. Don't hear any additional comments. So let's go ahead and vote on approving recommendation 4 and 5. All those in favor of approving recommendation 4 and 5, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstention? All right, great. Back to you, Ryan.
Thank you. And Zoe reminds us it is minimum required terms and conditions. That's what MRTC stands for. Thank you. Thank you, Zoe. Okay. Now on to a nice and meaty cluster of topics relative to the QTF, which is the QHIN technical framework, and then exchange modalities and exchange purposes. So recommendation six is in many ways a repeat of our recommendations from our last round from the TEFCA task force, really asking that ONC be specific primarily about what, and leave room for flexibility and innovation on how. So that the TEFCA should outline functional requirements sufficient to meet policy goals and avoid whenever possible identifying technical solutions. There's a little bit of a gloss to this. The task force, I think, did realize eventually that the MRTCs outlined functional requirements, but they got confused with the very specific nature of the QTF, and it was sort of easier to read the QTF than to read the terms and conditions that are buried in the MRTCs. And so we felt it was appropriate for ONC to remove the QTF because that's really an RCE and a QHIN discussion with their familiarity with exchange standards and approaches. And then secondly, clearly separate and document the functional requirements. And we sort of jokingly refer to this as the QFF, the QHIN functional framework, because there has to be an acronym for everything. Again, these requirements actually are documented in the MRTCs. They're just not from a user perspective. They're not as clearly called out as the functional requirements applicable to QHINs. And so the nature of this recommendation really is just to make the document and the terms and conditions more user-friendly so that people know exactly what are the functional requirements, and then to the extent that there's any suggested enablement, separate those two. And then since relevant to our recommendation of removing the QTF. Since there was a QTF in the draft two, and since the QTF was created and intended as initial guidance, we recommend that the RC be provided with the comments and feedback that ONC received. It already is clear, but just double down on the clarity that the RC is free to choose any technical enablement of the functional requirements. So that's recommendation six, sort of a meaty one. Recommendation seven, we got confused as a task force on the term targeted and broadcast query because the way this is defined in the MRTCs is actually not aligned with the sort of, I don't want to call it the common language view of broadcast query, but the accepted meaning that that exchange aficionados would think when they think about the words targeted query and broadcast query. So we recommend that ONC avoid using those terms and focus primarily on the functional requirements for the QHIN query response. And if we can go on to the next recommendation. We had a substantial amount of discussion about this notion of specialty QHINs that sort of morph to fit the exchange purposes and modalities that are relevant for their participants and participant members. TEFC MRTCs already carve out an exception for participants and participant members that primarily focus on individual access services. We also make recommendations relative to public health. And there may be additional participants, participant members, so we discussed briefly during the task force the notion of SSA in disability determination that may use the TEFCA modalities and exchange purposes somewhat differently from more general actors like providers. We believed as a task force that it is appropriate for QHINs to serve a floor set of functional requirements. We also believe that it may be appropriate for participants and participant members to serve and respond to a subset of exchange purposes and modalities that are appropriate to their scenarios of uses. And then in the comment of the recommendations, we also note some of the elements that might be part of that floor, and also note that there is there'll be evolution off the floor, and in those areas where there's evolution off the floor, there may be a role for some specialized QHINs. Recommendation nine is the recommendation relative to the notion that there should be a single on-ramp. We believe that there are multiple exchanges already operating across the country, and that, again, this is consistent with our recommendations the first time around, that really the TEFCA is intending to address a subset of nationwide exchange requirements, and that ONC should clarify the role of the TEFCA relative to parallel trust frameworks. And in particular, we focused on message delivery and the intended uses of message delivery relative to other uses of network activities that send messages, including direct trust, and also including local exchange of ADT messaging. So let's just make sure that we are clear about what message delivery is intended for and what forms of exchange it's intended to supplant and what forms of exchange are intended to be parallel to the TEFCA. I think that's it. What's the next page look like?
I think this is a good group.
Yeah. So let's take this one as a group and get comment and potentially approval.
All right, great. So we have before you recommendations 6, 7, 8, and 9. Any comments, suggestions for these this group of four recommendations? Christina.
Thanks. So just a quick question. If you go back to one slide, slide 11, I think, or yeah, that one, the comment that the REC should be able to choose the the technology and standards, and Owen should take away some of this. I'm a little concerned about that. I understand that, like, current models exist and we need to have a balance, but I just would like some more clarity on the discussion on, like, where you see that kind of floor for standards that need to be in place in order for interoperability to work. If you're looking at just functional requirements, a functional requirement can use multiple standards and approaches, and is that going to be a barrier to interoperability?
Thank you for that, good opportunity for clarification here. So definitely the RCE is establishing the QHIN technical framework and establishing a floor set of technical framework elements. And this really is already enshrined in TEFCA Draft 2, that the QTF that was in Draft 2 was intended as a helpful starting point. Our feedback as a task force is that it's actually less helpful than you'd think, because it, in some ways, it sort of limits the discourse that the RCEs and the QHINs are likely to engage in, number one. Or number two, there are areas where there's existing exchange that uses some of those standards, and there's existing exchange that doesn't, and we believe it's appropriate for the RC and QHIN just to be really clear about the functional requirements as they're choosing the technical specification. So again, the notion in the TEFCA is that the RCE does establish the QHIN technical framework, and that's sufficient variation. That's sufficient for achieving the policy goals. Really, the intent of this is to say, let's make it really clear what the functional requirements behind those technical specifications are, so that we don't have the technical specifications driving the show. And then secondly, really double down on the notion that's already in the TEFCA Draft 2, that the QTF is a sort of helpful starting point, but should not constrain the selection effort that the RCE will go into when it negotiates exchange standards. So as an example, you know, there's a sea change that we're going through here between SOAP-based transaction standards and FHIR-based transaction standards. The RCE and QHINs may feel it's appropriate to kind of go at the existing standards for a little while while we make a transition to FHIR. They may also believe that it's more appropriate to make a more rapid transition to FHIR, and we don't want to overly constrain that discussion by saying, hey, ONC thinks this is the initial set of standards. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you. I'm trying to find a balance of where I want us to be and kind of the reality to get buy-in and make this work.
Yeah, so no, our comment as a task force was that the RC is presumed to be familiar and comfortable with exchange standards. There are a number of nationwide networks that are already using exchange standards cross-network to exchange data. So, you know, we already have an emerging body of work here, and it's probably more appropriate for the RC to take that emerging body of work and see where we need to go.
And Arian, I'd add that not to minimize what this recommendation is saying, I actually think it's not that big of a change in that we're saying our understanding is that the RCE is given the QTF as a starting point anyway.
Yep.
So what we're sort of saying is, oh, okay, well, the RCE is going to make sure that TEFCA is implemented in a standard way. We want to sort of underline that the QTF is a starting point since it's already out there, but we also want them, the RCE, to have the benefit of the comments that are ultimately approved by HITAC.
Exactly. Thanks for that.
Christina, did you have other comments or questions then?
No, I really appreciate the clarity and the thought that went into this, so thank you.
Thank you.
Good. Other questions, comments, suggestions for recommendations 6, 7, 8, or 9? All right, I don't see any additional hands up. Let's go ahead and vote on approval of recommendations 6, 7, 8, and 9. All those in favor of those four recommendations, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstention? All right, great. Arian, on to 10.
All right. So this is a weighty set of topics relative to individual access services. We had I'll give a little bit of gloss for 10, 10A, and 10B. We had a pretty split discussion in the task force relative to the initial floor of individual access capabilities. There was strong agreement in the task force that read-only access is only one of the individual access needs, that there are multiple, and we enumerated such activities as correction and amendment, patient-generated health data, data donation for research, as key individual exchange use cases. So we wanted to start off our recommendations, number one, saying that the needs of individuals should be front and center in the TESCA, and that those needs certainly will be broader than exercising the read-only right to access established under HIPAA. The second part of this recommendation is noting that the access patterns that patients have, or that we as individuals have, are somewhat different from the access patterns that providers have. So as an example, where it may be appropriate to provide a clinical document formatted for clinical interpretation to clinicians, patients are much more likely to access via APIs. And so as we consider the standards, and particularly the US CDI enabling standards, we should be thoughtful about how we align the exchange modalities with API-based access so that patients actually can achieve the benefits of the TESCA on their, for example, smartphones. And then the second part of this represents a real split in the task force, and I will frame up A and B as saying there was a split between folks who want the TEFCA initially to go farther and are prepared to force a little bit new use cases into the TEFCA before it starts. And a group that represented by alternative recommendation 10B that believes that achieving nationwide access is a significant step forward for individuals, and that we should certainly not stop there. So the sense of the task force was split between those people who say, look, if you don't force a high bar right now, then we're just going to keep kicking the can down the road, versus those who say, hey, if you get substantial amounts of individual access today, that are cross-network, that's actually a pretty huge step forward, and we should continue to work on it. So that's what's framed up in 10A and 10B. 10A says ONC should expand it immediately, including in a minimum right to amendment and additional use cases, including shared care planning, patient-generated health data, and data donation for research. And then 10B says, let's establish a policy framework to get to broader individual access, individual services, including the ones listed above. that those services should be rolled out when they're available and ready for large-scale adoption, and that the exchange purposes described in Draft 2 should start immediately because it's a significant step forward. So that's where we got to, a little bit of a split decision here, and we wanted to fairly represent both sides of that split decision. Let's go on to the next slide. There was a little bit of a technical issue with respect to the term direct participant. So we want ONC to clarify direct relationship, and we want ONC to clarify the meaning of the term direct relationship with respect to response, as it sometimes says, versus with respect to kind of where the home participant is relative to query and access. and that's recommendation 12 is more specific about making it clear if there is an intent to distinguish between the home participant member for an individual relative to which participants or participant members are allowed to respond to query, that ONC probably shouldn't use the same term in both places. And then we should align the term direct relationship with applicable law. And then we have a little bit more on the next slide with respect to this. Recommendation 13 relative to individual access services notes that there are public health agencies whose mission is primarily to collect data for disease surveillance. They do not maintain a longitudinal patient record that is formatted and applicable for individual access, and the data that they get really is copies of data that's already held by the data source that generally is a covered entity. So we felt it was, in those cases, it was going beyond the mission of public health to require them to respond to individual access queries unless required by applicable law. And just as a note that in our research, this is highly variable state by state. Again, just the notion of we don't want TEFCA to change the mission of public health relative to surveillance. There's some commentary relative to immunization registries that if you're interested, you can read. But there's a little more nuance here, but this is the gist of the recommendation that the task force agreed to. So this is the cluster relating to individual access services, I believe. I don't think there's anything more in the next slide.
No.
No. Good. So we should pause there and
let's
get feedback.
Let's ask for comments, questions, or suggestions on the entire bundle here. But I'd like to go back to recommendation 10 with its modification and alternative recommendations 10A and 10B. Let me just make sure I'm understanding. You have a common recommendation 10 at the opening of this slide, and then the two alternatives. Is it the feeling of the task force that these two alternative recommendations are not in conflict with each other and could be adopted as additional?
Absolutely not. These
supplemental
are
recommendations?
No, these are alternative recommendations that are inconsistent with each other because A says we should hold off until we address a larger subset of needs, and B says we should get going with individual access as quickly as possible.
It's actually the reverse of what you just said.
Sorry. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry for confusing. But they are inconsistent. They are inconsistent and not mutually adoptable. So they're really alternatives that express the profound split in the task force.
Is it the desire of the task force then to have the committee?
No,
one of these two?
I suspect that the committee is going to be in the same position as the task force. In fact, there were multiple committee members who were on the task force. And so our recommendation is just to pass these alternatives on to ONC and essentially kick the problem upstairs.
Okay. As a committee, if we approve two alternative recommendations that are sort of, they're not compatible, you can't take both, right? So we're putting forward these two alternative recommendations for consideration by ONC as background for them making their decision
on correct
where
that's
to
right
fall on this?
That's right.
Or are we choosing one?
I would believe that the sense of the committee would be equally as split as the sense of the task force, because as I said, there were many committee members who were on the task force, and so it is our recommendation as a task force that we pass these alternatives on to ONC, representing the sense of the task force and the profound split. That's why we really tried to frame around recommendation 10, which is the real recommendation, the consensus recommendation here, which is intending to focus on ensuring that ONC and the TEFCA address the needs of individuals first and foremost as exchange participants under the TEFCA. And that also that they set an expansive, the common recommendation here is that ONC set an expansive policy goal with respect to individual participation, and then really note the difference of opinion relative to 10A and 10B.
Okay. With that as clarification, comments, questions, suggestions for, let's start with recommendation 10 with its two alternative recommendations. I'd like to know if there's anyone on the committee that has comments, questions, or suggestions on this slide that you see displayed and these alternative recommendations. What I'm hearing from the task force is their recommendation is that we as a committee put forward both alternative recommendation 10A and 10B without showing a preference for one or the other, but they be used as background for the Office of National Coordinator to then formulate their position on this. And I see a couple hands. I think I saw Les come up first.
Hi, so I have two comments. One, if we send up these alternative recommendations, we really are endorsing recommendation 10, which it covers a broad scope and makes this very clear. I believe that substantial effort is needed in this area. I'm just not quite sure that it's the first step that should be taken in an incremental world. Secondly, I'd like to say that alternative 10A, which again I would support conceptually, I'd like to see a little different language on the precision medicine initiative, saying that a patient should be able to download for the purposes of the precision medicine initiative and upload their clinical data, and that this should be supported. So I can give some specific language if we decide to adopt 10A to make this more precise. But I have concerns that if we try to force it something that's not ready, we're going to wind up in kind of an early meaningful use situation where the rules are clearly ahead of our capabilities.
Yep. So Les, I take it you're a 10B-er, and just want to reflect that there are 10B-ers and there are 10A-ers.
Certainly like the content of 10A, but I just don't know whether we're ready.
Yeah, and then with respect to your concern about the specific wording on PMI, the recommendation here is to address the use cases, and so rather than get into detail about how to address the use cases, I do think it's appropriate to note the need to address the use cases, which might include the capabilities that you described.
Yeah, I mean, you could just say the precision medicine initiative that allows the first phrase would be enough as that might be enough. It may be better not to go into the details of the protocols used within that.
Yep.
Thank you.
So Les, I hear you considering an amendment to the third bullet of recommendation 10A. I'll let you ponder that for a moment, and I'll go on to the other folks with their hands up.
Yeah, respectfully, I think if you look at the bullet, I think it actually does address the concern that Les is raising, that it really is focused on the policy and not on the specific standards and enablement. But if Les on rereading and further consideration wants to propose an amendment, obviously we'd support that.
Well, like I said, it sounded like he was thinking about maybe deleting all the words after access their health information, but I'm not sure. So let's maybe consider that, Les, and let us know if that's something you want to propose, and I'll go on to Christina.
Okay.
Yeah, so for it actually is in line with what Les was talking about. For the precision medicine one, I think that the precision medicine isn't allowing patients necessarily to access their information. It's dependent on them accessing and contributing it to the All of Us research program. So
yep.
Maybe a slight amendment that is dependent on enabling. Let me think about that.
Yeah, no, I think Les' proposal here is that we delete everything after NIH close parentheses.
Yeah.
So that we.
That would be pretty close, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to just say additional use cases to incorporate may include the precision medicine initiative, that otherwise we're getting into the details.
Yeah, yeah. Totally fair.
Downloading and support uploading. But
I would support that amendment. John, I think that actually makes it clearer.
Yeah, it's simpler.
Yep. So let's frame an amendment. The amendment is to delete the words in 10A sub-bullet 3 after starting with the word that allows all the way to the end of the sentence.
All right. So we have a proposed amendment by deletion. Okay, excellent. We have a proposed amendment and seconded to delete all the words following the parentheses NIH. Any questions, comments about the proposed amendment? And Stephen, I know you have your hand up, but I believe your hand up was before the amendment was made. I'm happy to entertain comments. But what I'm looking for right now are comments about the amendment. So, Stephen, if you have a comment about the amendment, please.
I mean, it's not a comment about the amendment per se, but it is sort of an orienting comment that we may want to consider prior to finalizing the amendment.
Okay, go ahead.
If I may, and I'm trying to get clarity on sort of what we are talking about with regard to the additional access services. To me, access implies access. It's patients' access or individuals accessing data. It seems to me that in 10A or in this, we're talking about individuals contributing data. And I don't see that specifically spelled out. I mean, when we're talking about requesting an amendment, I mean, that's not really contributing data to their record. It's simply sending a message, to HIM saying, I'd like to request an amendment. When we're talking about participating in shared care planning, I mean, you can participate by simply accessing a shared care plan and maybe commenting on it, or you can actually contribute data to it. When we're talking about patient-generated health data, are we talking about the patient simply being able to access the data that the healthcare system has collected from them, or are we actually talking about a bidirectional flow here?
Yeah.
And if we are talking bidirectional, which I think we are by implication, we should really state that explicitly.
Yeah, so maybe this could be a second amendment. The TEFCA was framed in terms of individual access services, or IAS. I think the sense of recommendation 10 is that we should set policy goals relative to individual services that include both access and data contribution. So I think your understanding is exactly correct. And some of the ambiguity here is that we're moving from language that ONC is using relative to individual access to a more generic set of individual services. But I think to Robert's point, we probably I think the amendment that's being suggested is separable from that point. So I might suggest that we address the amendment first to clarify that bullet, and then come back to this issue of individual services and clarify the intent of 10 is to be more expansive than access.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. So I agree. Let's, Stephen, I think your comment is more directed at the entire issue. I want to finish off our discussion on the proposed amendment to the third bullet of Recommendation 10A. So other comments or questions about the proposed amendment of deleting those words in the third recommendation, third bullet of Recommendation 10A? Seeing no other comments or questions, let's go ahead and vote on the proposed amendment. And again, the proposed amendment is to delete all the words after that parenthesis NIH to the end of the sentence. Oh, there, somebody just put that in the middle. Okay. So this language that you see in notes 12 would be what's remaining after the deletion of the third bullet of Recommendation 10A. So one last time, any comments or questions about this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of this amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right, hearing none. The proposed amendment then passes, so we will delete that language. Now, to Stephen's point, let's go back to the entire set of Common Recommendation 10, Alternative Recommendation 10A as amended, and Alternative Recommendation 10B. Other comments, questions, or suggestions? Stephen, back to you.
Yeah, so we were talking about whether we could more clearly define individual services. And clearly in other parts, we use the term access, exchange, and use. I wonder if those same terms could be utilized here in referring to what we are offering to individuals. Certainly exchange captures the idea that the data would go bidirectionally between two parties. And we certainly do want the individuals to be able to use their data. So that would be one potential terminology to incorporate.
Can I propose an amendment here is that we insert, we propose that after the words access over time, we insert comma to include full access, exchange, and use.
So you're looking at the Common Recommendation 10, at the end of the first sentence in Common Recommendation 10?
Correct. So
adding those words.
Yes. The first sentence in Recommendation number 10 would then read, those needs will certainly be broader than exercising the HIPAA right to access over time, comma, to include full access, exchange, and use. Period.
Okay, I think that's being displayed in the public comment chat line. And the words you want to, you're proposing to add are to include full access, exchange, and use. Do we have that right?
Yes.
Okay, so now notes 13 that's displayed here shows the proposed amendment. I don't know if we can highlight that or not. So that language that's highlighted is the proposed additional words that would be added under the amendment. Okay, so let's take some comments about the proposed amendment. Stephen, do you have additional comments, or otherwise I'll go to Cynthia?
No, I think that's fine. Thanks.
Okay. Cynthia, you have your hand up?
Yes. Hi. I'm trying to pull up, if the note can just get a little bit lower, then I can see both of the common recommendation 10 and the amended note. Could you just clarify this, because this just seems a bit obscure, a little vague. Could you just clarify tightly what you're saying here or what you're trying to say here in recommendation 10 for the individual?
Yeah, thank you. So the existing TESCA focuses on individual access. So that would be the right of an individual to access their data using the means established through the TESCA for cross-exchange access. So functionally, that would be the ability of a patient to pull down their record regardless of where it exists. The amendment here suggests that, while that's I don't even want to get into that because that's the difference between 10A and 10B. The amendment here wants to clarify that that the end stage of ONC policy should be to enable individual access, exchange, and use, which could include the use cases that are discussed below that involve not just access but also exchange, that is supplying information, and use, that we establish a broader set of individual services that are relevant for the variety of needs that individuals have to participate in their own care.
Adrian, all due respect, I'm just commenting back. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
In all due respect, so just that the individual can readily access and be pushed their information to, say, an open standard API, a tool of use, and be able to also exchange or edit or correct, or even, are you looking at even deleting and correct information, that the patient is empowered to control that access, but to make it very usable, so that the patient can also, let's take a circumstance where you have one surgeon needing to get what the clinical care plan is of a patient, and the patient wants that authority, and they're stuck because they can't get it out of the institution. It's in there somewhere in their data world, but how does, you know, making it that as a patient goes across to across providers or across specialists, that they are able to readily exchange and use that. Is that what you're saying here concretely? And are they readily able to if the care plan is wrong? Like, for instance, on my medications in my database right now in a major institution are so incorrect, and they're from 15 years ago, and they don't apply. An antibiotic from 10 years ago. So how do you correct to say, no, I haven't been taking that antibiotic for 15 years?
So I think you're exactly on the intent here. The TESCA Draft 2 establishes the notion of cross-exchange access that would address some of the needs that you're describing, your ability to get access to your information regardless of where it was stored, and regardless of what exchange serves that particular participant, so that you're not kind of locked into one network where you can exchange data, but then somebody else uses a different network, you can't. And you know, I think you understand better than anybody, that's the real world that patients experience. I can access data through this app, but not through that app, from this institution, but not from that institution. So the intent of TESCA Draft 2, as stated, is to broaden access services. And then you're exactly correct. The intent of this amendment is to say, the intent of Recommendation 10 is to ask ONC to broaden the individual services beyond access to incorporate broader services we use the technical language that Congress used in CURES in this amendment that that Stephen suggested to incorporate exchange and use. And then we highlight in 10A, 10B some of the use cases that include, as you know, the ability to request amendment to existing records, as well as participate in shared care planning. So that would be contributing your goals and your status towards your goals, as well as other use cases, including data donation for research, participating in research activities, and submitting patient-generated health data, for example, from an attached glucometer, et cetera. So really the intent is encompassing the scenarios that you describe, and the broad intent is to open from access only to a broader range of individual services.
So, Adrian, that's great. And I think the thing that would be really helpful for the world in which we live is for control and management of the patient, that it's not that they need to go back into a system and put in a request to say, okay, now will you update this, blah, 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 and it takes multiple steps and individual human resources to do that. So I think, you know, to be able to give more empowerment and control to the patient in their health information, where their health information can and cannot go, it would be great as we move to the world in which we live in other capacities of our lives.
That's right, and that's the intent of the second sentence in Recommendation 10, which really calls on ONC to note that the access patterns for individuals are different from the access patterns for providers, and in particular that that individuals are more likely to access via the app of their choice, and so the capabilities that are established through the TEFCA should be aligned with those usage patterns.
Well, I just this is about giving the patient empowerment and control of their information, that they can have, that they can actually change their information where it's not correct, or provide that exchange. I think you had, Stephen, or you guys had put exchange in, which is great. And I would just push one more level to say to the empowerment of control.
Yeah, I think if you look in recommendations 10A and 10B, you'll see all of those use cases that you're looking for. Sometimes I think we use technical language rather than patient-friendly language, so we talk about the HIPAA right to modification or amendment, which encompasses correction and the like. So maybe this is just a question of terminology, but I think we're all aligned with exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's who has that right, right? So if it's modification or just that it's not the EHR vendor, it's not the provider, it's that the patient is empowered with that modification or, you know, change and exchange, right?
Yep.
So that somehow I'm just looking for more in control in the patient's hands.
Yeah, so if you've got a proposed amendment, I think we'd be happy to consider
that?
It.
Could we add the word empowerment and control, or the two-way in the exchange, that that there's a readily available control for the patient, or empowerment with their information.
The opening of the recommendation does put the individual front and center. I don't know if that helps you at all, Cynthia.
Maybe we amend.
Let me just see if there's other comments.
I
understand. I want to focus on this amendment that you see displayed on the screen in blue, those additional words. And Cynthia, if you can just hold on just a second, I want to see if there's additional comments as well. Stephen?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Cynthia. I think access, exchange, and use are things that we're all pretty comfortable with. Control, I think, really goes to a new level and suggests to me, I think what you're getting at, Cynthia, is that data that was collected by a provider is maintained by a provider in their system, that the patient could directly modify that. And I'll just say as a clinician that's uncomfortable to me. I think the idea that patients can addend it, that they can request amendments to it as they can now under HIPAA, is awesome. But the idea that a patient could go into a record that I've created and actually strike data from it, modify data from it within it, without my review, consent, you know, et cetera, I think that really crosses into a whole new realm that we haven't really discussed. So I'm comfortable with access, exchange, and use. I think when we talk about direct control, I'm not ready to go there quite yet. I think we have to lay a foundation for that.
Carolyn, did you have a comment?
I did, thanks. I just wanted to commend Stephen on the framing of that perspective and to note my agreement with it. As all of you know, I have worked pretty directly and pretty tightly on patient empowerment and engagement and facilitating access of all sorts for patients and the expanded use of patient-generated data, patient-reported outcomes, and other things. But I think Stephen is spot on with the way that's framed, and I think that's a perspective we should seriously consider. Thanks.
Thanks. Other comments or questions about the proposed amendment, which is now visible under Notes 13, highlighted in blue? Okay. Let's proceed with voting on this amendment. All those in favor of this amendment to add the words that you see in blue, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right. The amendment is then passed. So we now have our amended recommendation 10 and alternative recommendation 10A and 10B, which at the recommendation of the task force is that we submit both alternative recommendations 10A and 10B for additional background for the ONC. Let's go ahead and vote on just this slide. 10, common 10 as amended, alternative recommendation 10A and 10B to be submitted for ONC's consideration. Any other comments about common recommendation 10, the two alternative recommendations, and the process of proceeding forward with both recommendation 10A and 10B? Seeing no other comments, let's go ahead and let's take a vote for approval of common recommendation 10, submitting alternative recommendation 10A and 10B. All those in favor of this, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? Okay, great. Now, if we can remove notes 13 from the screen, and let's finish off on the additional recommendations that were here as well. I think we have 11, 12, and 13. Let me just make sure if we have any comments about recommendation 11, 12, or 13 as presented in the play-by-play by Arian. All right, hearing none, let's go ahead and let's vote on approving recommendations 11, 12, and 13. All those in favor of approving recommendations 11, 12, and 13, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstention? All right, great. Arian, back to you.
Yeah, John, could I ask you to take over for a second? Because I'm in the position of being locked out on my computer for a second. So if you can take over, and then I'll get back in and get control back.
Sure, no worries.
Thank you.
So we're on the privacy section, beginning with recommendation 14. This is related to meaningful choice and the recommendation that we leave granular requirements to the RCE. There was significant conversation about the definition of meaningful choice. There's a significant discussion about the definition of meaningful choice and its intent. I'm reloading this in RAM.
Hey, I'm back. If you want me to.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. So the notion of meaningful choice. This was a term that was originally established by the Privacy and Security Tiger Team of the Policy Committee many, many years ago. The notion here is that individuals be fully explained the choice that they're making, and then with respect to the TEFCA. That choice is to participate or not participate in TEFCA-mediated exchange, that is cross-network exchange. The task force discussed that a couple of things. Number one is that it's a little confusing what choice they're exercising. We want to make it clear that they're exercising the choice to participate in TEFCA-mediated cross-exchange, but there may be other choices that they need to make with respect to local exchange and their HIE. And the second is really just to establish what we mean by meaningful choice, that it's not an purely an opt-out. It is a meaningful choice that incorporates the sub-bullets below that allows people to time to make a decision, non-compelled, non-discriminatory, with full transparency and education, commensurate with circumstances, consistent with expectations, and revocable. So really wanted to clarify what meaningful choice is and both where it applies and also how it's presented to the individual. If we go on to the second page.
Excuse me, Ariane, I have had my hand up. Oh. Just ask a question. It's Cynthia.
Cynthia, is this about the first recommendation on security? I'm sorry, meaningful choice?
It's a question that I have about privacy and meaningful choice, yes, and it's about an application of it, please.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. So I have a question, and that is a real-world example of a question. I can give you an exact example in the Boston area of an urgent care that's hospital owned by a major hospital, that in their installation of their EHR vendor on privacy, and I've brought this up in a HIPAA, in a high-tech meeting previously, but when you go to sign in and they ask you to sign digitally in, there's nothing to read. You're just given a signature line to sign your HIPAA release of privacy on how your data is used. So you're just given an iPad with a blank screen. And then even having someone be a 20-year-old who would be now an adult, even though their insurance card is provided and their information is provided, being a parent of a young adult, the next field that is required by this major hospital system and their EHR vendor is both parents' names, a credit card number, and the parents' social security numbers. And you cannot go to the next screen or get urgent care unless the credit card and the social security numbers are entered. Now, if we're sharing all this data and information across systems, for one, I question and challenge why a 20-year-old person who's insured needs both parents' names and social security numbers as part of a field that needs to go in, even when those social security numbers I thought were something that the industry got away from requiring as an identifier because of possible identity leak. But this is real world. And this is here in Boston. And how when we're sharing patient information, when that hospital system now has both parents and their credit card and their social to that link to that child who's an adult, how does that get shared and how is that privacy maintained? And is that even legit? And how does the, when I went to talk in the last note about control, how does a patient say, I don't want that in my record and I don't want that shared across the TEFCA system? So this is my question to you all in a practical sense about how I think there's some overreach being done, how we think, you know, as an organization, we think that there's overreach being done on the privacy of information and the ask for information and even the providing of what that signature line is really signing for. Could you please all help me with how this would be handled?
So thank you very much for that comment, and I think that's exactly what we're saying here. And that was the recommendation, as I said, as far back as I want to say 2011, from the Privacy and Security Tiger Team, that this notion of meaningful choice, the focus is not just on the choice that patients are making, but also their conditions for making that choice meaningful. And so if you look at the sub-bullets, the six sub-bullets here, for example, to address some of the concerns that you just raised relating to your real-world experience, number two, the notion that the choice is not compelled and not used for discriminatory purposes. So, you know, you can't force an individual to, you can opt out, but if you opt out, I won't receive you care or won't provide you care. It would be prohibited here. Second is full transparency in education. What are you consenting or making a choice about? The revocability of that choice, so the ability to change your mind. I think all of those are certainly in line with what we're recommending here. And in fact, what's already enshrined in the TEFCA, and we're just seeking greater clarification. So I believe that everybody here agrees with that point, and the intent here is to make that point even stronger and clarify obligations relative to providing appropriate choice to patients and individuals.
Yeah, I think, Arian, the challenge is that patients, this is a real-world situation. Unfortunately, I experienced it firsthand. So I'm speaking you're hearing it from the horse's mouth, where the patient was refused care without those fields being completed.
Yep.
Okay, and so...
I think, Cynthia, I think that's what they're trying to address here in these first six bullets after Recommendation 14.
And then the question how does the hospital have a right to ask for parents, an adult person's parents' credit cards and Social Security numbers? How does a patient have recourse to argue that that's built into their system and they don't want that shared as part of their personal health information? Or not their personal, but their electronic health information. So, you know, you're saying it nicely here, but is it strong enough for what's happening out there and this financial information that's affecting many people, not just that patient, but that's financial information that is overreaching. And how does that patient even know that it's overreaching? Because most people wouldn't even know it. Right. So what do we do to protect here? It's a question I have because there's a big power in these organizations and there's a lot of information gathering that may not be appropriate. And how does the patient have recourse when they're denied care?
So Cynthia, let me propose that we let Arian finish off the presenting of the privacy meaningful choice set of recommendations and see if that doesn't. Obviously, you have some strong experiences in this area, so I'd like to let him finish his task force recommendations to the committee in this area of meaningful choice and privacy. And let's see if that
Thank
doesn't
you. And
help,
I guess the thing is, if you all can just tell me if this information that a certain oligopoly in the Boston market is collecting today would be shared now across TEFCA.
Yeah,
in today's world, as we have defined TEFCA, would those fields be shared?
The intent of these recommendations is to require participants and participant members, including the organization to which you refer, to provide non-compelled, clear choice to the patient, to the individual, about how they wish to participate. So the answer is no. Now, clearly the policy tools in the TEFCA are, you know, have a certain set of applicability. So this tool alone is not going to compel organizations always to do the right thing. But the intent is to make a clear set of obligations for participant members that are exactly what you're looking for.
Well,
so,
do we need a privacy to present to patients their Bill of Rights? And this is sort of why, and I understand where everybody went on not putting control in there. But as a patient, if I don't want my parents or my daughter's parents' financial social security numbers and credit card information to be shared across TEFCA, I should know that as a right, that
yes.
I could disentangle
yes.
identity and financial information if I chose to,
yes.
and be in control of that.
Cynthia, the answer is yes. So I think if you look at the sub bullets here, I think you'll find that we're saying exactly we're reiterating exactly what you're asking for. Robert, I'm going to propose, as you say, that we continue with the other set of recommendations relative to privacy.
Yep. Please do.
So if we can go on to the next page, 15. Again, a little bit of background here. The TEFCA Draft 2 notes that when a patient changes or revokes their choice to participate and says, hey, I don't want to participate, there's some information that's already been shared. It's been incorporated into the charts, may have been made for medical decision-making, we're not asking that information will maintain in the chart. There was a discussion by the task force as to whether there should be some segregation of that data that's been previously shared. I think the consensus of the task force is that was not practical, and that where the TEFCA Draft 2 lines up is correct. There was a strongly held minority opinion that there should be additional segregation of that data. So that's just a note to the ONC to note the strong opinions in that regard. Recommendation 16 is that this is a very technical issue, that the way that the MRTCs were defined, it referred to a specific section, and we believe that it should refer to exchange purposes. We believe it should actually refer back to Section 2.2.2 of the MRTCs, which is a broader set of constraints and definitions relative to disclosure. I'm seeing the screen move all around. So maybe somebody's scrolling. And when you're scrolling, you're scrolling for everybody. Thank you. Okay. Sorry. Can we go to recommendation 17? Okay. So we also discussed requiring or requesting ONC to make it clear how broadly an expressed choice will be applied. We note that once exercised by an individual, the meaningful choice is expected to communicate up and shared across. So we were requesting ONC to clarify which organizations are expected to be aware and enforce that exercise of choice. And I believe that's our last recommendation with regard to meaningful choice.
Great. Thank you. Cynthia, let me just hold off for a second, Cynthia, because you had a chance to comment. I want to make sure we allow others to have comments on the suite of recommendations under the heading of meaningful choice. So any other comments, questions, or suggestions for this group of recommendations on privacy and meaningful choice? Les.
Hi, thanks. Yeah. As an operator of a health information exchange, this is a very high bar, and that while it's extremely important that patients have the right to choose about where their health information goes, one has to look at the cost and the benefit and whether you'll exacerbate health disparities by placing the very high bar that meaningful choice has for patients to understand and to decide to contribute their activity. This sort of opt-in approach is likely to result in much less uptake of HIE by people, supposedly consistent with their preferences, but mostly because there's no microeconomic incentives for them to do this until they actually need care.
Yeah, let's just to clarify, and we're trying to stay away from the words opt-in or opt-out, but the intent of the TESCA exercise of choice is a default to participate with the ability to not participate. We're really focusing on the obligations that participant and participant members have to explain what's going on to patients in practice.
I'm not exactly sure that it's clear based on my reading of this that it's favoring an opt-out framework. That my feeling is it feels much more opt-in than opt-out.
So I apologize for that. That's really just we're going off the TEFCA and making recommendations in areas where we seek greater clarity in the TEFCA, and the TEFCA makes it very clear that the choice that's exercised is a choice to not participate with a default to participate.
I think that I'm okay. That sounds great. I'm sorry if I've distracted us then, but The key point here is that an opt-in choice with a meaningful choice system would be extremely onerous.
Perhaps this is Cynthia, as I had my hand raised. Thank you. I agree with Les and would look to see perhaps in this recommendation 17, it could just be more clear and maybe to restate that it is really an opt-out rather than an opt-in as stated in TEFCA. And I do think that I would like to add that however anything is communicated, that it's communicated very clearly in sort of strunken white English to the patients or in what language the Strunk and White would have simply stated to patients, so it's very clear. And then finally, I guess I'm still confused about how, if there's information like the requirement by the EHR vendor and the hospital provider system to have perhaps overreached with linkage to parents and and financial information or another situation where a patient could correct require that information not be shared across all networks through TEFCA, that in fact we should empower patients to be able to the question I would ask for the task force, how would you address the question I asked earlier, where that if it is an automatic default that you're in unless you opt out, how does a patient be able to say, hey, I'm happy to be opt in, but this is not appropriate to share across systems because AI and big data can go delve into information that they shouldn't be. Could you guys please help on how we address the type of problem and that how we address information being that information being shared that shouldn't?
Yeah, can we go back up to recommendation 14, which I think is two pages up?
Yep.
So number one, I believe recommendation 14 already expresses the intent here is to that the choice that the patient's exercising or individual exercising is to disallow further prospective use and disclosure. So again, that's we're trying to avoid opt-in, opt-out because it's a shorthand that's not terribly helpful sometimes, but that clearly is an opt-out consideration. That's very clear in the TEFCA and also clear in our recommendation 14. Secondly, Cynthia, again, I just look at the six bullets below. I think we had a discussion about more granular choices that the patient or the individual would exercise, and in the language surrounding this recommendation, we very clearly note that over time we support this as a floor, and that we would expect QHINs and RCEs to establish additional requirements to provide more choice than is the floor that's mandated by the TEFCA. So, Robert, I think maybe we should just go up to this group as a block and see if we have agreement on these recommendations relative to meaningful choice.
Yep. Any further comments, questions, or suggestions on recommendations under privacy meaningful choice, which is recommendations 14 through 17, I believe?
That's right, 14 through 17.
So, Arian, just to get clarity, if I'm a patient, the only choice I have today is to totally opt out of my entire record being shared.
Yeah.
Is that what your answer is to my direct question?
Yeah, with respect to the TEFCA and cross-exchange activities, the floor that the TEFCA proposes is to opt out of full exchange. The task force supports that be a floor and that additional means, and we had a substantive discussion about this in the task force, that additional means for additional control be added and that this be clearly a floor.
So there's no redaction ability at all in today's world of redacting certain private information, financial or private at all. It all goes right now, all or nothing. That's it. So there's no ability. And so we're just saying in that other recommendation from last week or something, you're saying the future recommendation is the only thing that's going to handle this problem. Is that what I'm just trying to understand?
Yes, that's right.
If anybody of your sharp mind
has a
way that it could be done today other than that.
No, I think you're right in understanding the current situation and the current set of recommendations.
Sasha, do you have a comment?
The task force to add that we add a line clearly to communicate that to patients then, that patients know that all of that information, including their financial and their social security, all of that information would go. So that somehow in the privacy portion that they know in today's world, this is how it's going to work. And perhaps in the future, they'll be able to redact certain information. But it's that.
Could we add that to a recommendation somewhere that's very clearly communicated? I do think that's already expressed, and again, maybe the language isn't as clear as you're hoping, but I do think that the intent here is to clearly explain in plain English to patients and individuals what's actually happening.
Okay, thank you. I just have trouble reading this language, so you know, God bless them for being able to get there. But thank you very much.
Sasha, you have your hand up?
Oh, I was just going to add that there, maybe to help with Cynthia's question briefly, there are current credit card processing guidelines about how credit card information can be used and stored to protect the consumer's privacy. And so that, while not part of TEFCA directly, is something that is presently available today. It's just sort of tangential to the discussion we're having about health data under TEFCA.
Okay.
Thanks for that clarification.
Other comments or questions about recommendation 14 through 17? Seeing none, let's go ahead and vote. All those in favor of approving recommendations 14 through 17, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? Seeing none. Erin, you want to proceed? Also to the group, we're approaching our sort of pre-assumed time frames. Our priority with this call is to complete the high-tech approval or modification and then approval of the recommendations from the TEFCA task force. And so we're going to proceed with that. We have two updates from two other groups that we have scheduled, and we'll get to those after we finish our first priority, which is to deal with these TEFCA recommendations. So, Arian, next.
Thank you. And I will refrain from saying that we're through the hard bits and should be on the downslope, because saying that always leads to trouble. So recommendation, we have now a set of recommendations relating to summary disclosures and auditable events. The MRTCs in the TEFCA address both auditable events and summary disclosure. We are requesting that we combine and align those recommendations so that what's audited is also feeding the summary of disclosures. There's a little sort of nitpick around retention being focused on audit as opposed to on summary of disclosures. We want to clarify where the summary of disclosures takes place. So it's from the entity with a direct relationship to the requesting individual. And disclosures when data has been pulled from the associated QHIN and have been requested by the associated QHIN. So it's really a set of disclosures with respect to the entities that the individual has relationship with. On the next page, is that our... What do we have on the next page? Yep, good. Okay, so those are our recommendations.
Those are
your
last two privacy ones.
Yeah, those are our recommendations relative to summary disclosure and auditable events.
Great. Other questions, comments, suggestions for recommendation 18 or 19 on the disclosures and auditable events? All right, seeing none, let's go ahead and vote on recommendation 18 and 19. All those in favor of recommendation 18 and 19, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. I'm sorry. I heard a comment.
This is Clem. I just wanted to let you know I'm late, but I voted in that last round. If you're
okay, great, Clem. Great to have you. Thanks. Okay. I think I stopped at any abstentions on voting for recommendations 18 and 19. Hearing none, Erin, move on.
Excellent. Okay. Now for security. So there were some specific recommendations relative to EHI outside the U.S. Our recommendation number 20 is that ONC should focus on the need for risk-based security assessment and remediation for QHINs. And not make where the data resides, that should be where the data resides. We have to have a typo. So first of all, request an amendment to add an S to where the data resides as the central criteria for security. And then we had a whole bunch of discussion relative to data at rest. The TEFCA draft makes reference to cloud services. We think it's better to talk about data at rest in the U.S. That's really to make sure that we've got clarity on governing law. And then recommendation number 22 recognizes that individuals do leave the United States and then in particular DOD, State Department members, and then all of us as individuals may leave national boundaries and still wish to get access to our information. And so we believe it's appropriate not to restrict data access to U.S. national boundaries, and instead let the data follow the patient. So that's a set of recommendations relating to EHI outside the U.S.
Why don't we pause here? Because I think even though these are all under the umbrella of security, they are some very discrete segmentations.
Correct. I think this is a nice little block to vote on.
Yep.
So first of all, just request amendment.
Let's take any comment.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah, obviously that's, I think, just sort of a typo thing
typo
about
correction.
Adding the
cool.
S to reside.
I have a question about Recommendation 22. This is Clem. And that's regarding, I think
yep.
it's appropriate and necessary for sort of extensions of U.S. healthcare systems like the Department of Defense to be able to get at the data where they exist. But I think it might get tricky to say just anybody can get it, and the patient can get at it, or anyone else can get at it from other countries, because then we get tangled in with some of the laws of the other countries where the Department of Defense, we may be contained, or embassies, things like that, we would be safe. So help me with that.
Yeah, so the clarity here is that the data needs to reside and be protected within U.S. national boundaries to make sure that we have U.S. national law applied. And our recommendation is that that restriction not restrict where data may be accessed. And again, as reference, I think a number of us do support actors, including DOD, State Department members, and others who do need to access their information outside national boundaries.
But
so I think.
Is there more than those groups? That is, are you saying anybody can, a doctor in Germany who's taking care of me could then look it up? And would that then tangle us into the German law?
No, I do not believe that we're stating that a doctor in Germany could access it, but are stating that there are cases where an individual might be outside national boundaries using their mobile phone and wishing to access information, and that we permit that.
Okay, good. All right, nice distinctions.
Okay, other comments or questions on recommendations 20, 21, and 22? Okay, seeing none, let's go ahead and vote. All those in favor of recommendations 20, 21, and 22, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right. Aaron, you want to do the next group?
Let's go. All right. Controlled and classified information. There were some very specific requirements relating to controlled and classified information. This is a designation designation enshrined in guidance about certain classes of information that are often where PHI is often considered controlled unclassified. We recommend striking this section because it creates obligations broadly for QHINs to address controlled unclassified information. And instead, we recommend that ONC make clear that additional obligations on data handling or any other specific requirements will be borne by federal partners. As federal partners on board, ONC should work to make sure that the additional security requirements don't impede the principle of reciprocity. And again, just a little gloss here is I think a number of us have experience with federal partners joining exchange and then kind of passing very high bar over usual practice for health data as enshrined by HIPAA onto other actors, and we feel it's appropriate for federal partners to join and participate. We also feel that the additional complexity should be borne by those federal partners. And maybe that's a logical grouping as well, because we're sort of into a lot of detail here.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and take comments, questions, or suggestions on recommendations 23 and 24. Again, seeing none, let's go ahead and vote on recommendations 23 and 24. All those in favor of recommendation 23 and 24, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, say no. Any abstentions? Great. Next grouping.
All right. Privacy and security labeling. I think we have 27 recommendations. So maybe I propose we just take 25 through 27 as our next cluster. Privacy and security labeling. There's some discussion relating to tagging. We believe labeling is the appropriate term. We recommend aligning any privacy security labeling requirements to common national standards and policy framework that's implemented in provider workflow systems. We noted that this committee previously recommended to ONC that there be value in privacy labeling, but more work's required to make labeling implementable. In particular, there should be accompanying policy guidance that addresses when labeled data can and can't be used and how duplicative data that's both labeled and unlabeled should be handled. So this, again, consistent with our previous recommendations in this area. Let's go to recommendation number 26. Oh, sorry. I think 28 is our last recommendation. So, and this is sort of a grab bag. Certificate authority. There was a specific set of requirements for certificate authorities. These are organizations that do identity assurance and issue, for example, enabling X.509 certificates. We believe that the requirements to be a good CA, that is certificate authority, go far beyond what's proposed in the MRTC terms and should be out of scope for TEFCA, and we recommend deleting the provision. With regard to identity proofing and authentication, we recommend that ONC make it clear that QHINs can accept identity proofing that's done by participant and participant members on the basis of flowdown terms. And then we agree on ONC's inclusion of AAL2 and IAL2. These are specific requirements relating to identity assurance and authentication that set a somewhat higher bar, but one that's actually in alignment with current norms, including the use of two factors. We recommend that ONC allow appropriate time for industry to accommodate these requirements. So that's 24, 25, 26, 27, 28 as a group.
Great.
A grab bag group of fairly detailed recommendations.
Right. Not to diminish the importance of any of them. So let's take comments about these last four recommendations in the grab bag, 25, 26, 27, and 28. Any comments, suggestions, or changes?
I, this is Clem. I have a question. I guess a question and, sure. And a comment. First, I got to compliment the explicit and exquisite kind of thinking that went into all these things. It's really very, very nice and good. But the question was about the first recommendation. I think it's 25. How does that relate to segmented privacy, or does it?
Yeah. Thank you, Clem, and appreciate the thoughts there. Segmented privacy is exactly what we're talking about in terms of labeling. And what we're recommending here is that rather than create additional TEFCA-specific labeling, tagging, segmentation requirements, that we align any requirements in the TEFCA with national standards and certification and policy. And again, the key point that we keep coming back to both as a task force and we addressed as a committee, is that the policy and standards need to go hand in hand, and I think that's consistent with the committee's broader recommendations. But again, just to be super clear, this is exactly the same topic. Data segmentation, labeling, or tagging are all exactly the same thing.
Okay, well, I brought up specifically because a previous committee discussion was sort of cool on, well, it wasn't definitive on how fast and when to proceed with segmented privacy.
Yeah, Clem, I think this recommendation is, that's not how I characterize the position, but I think this recommendation is consistent with the committee's previous recommendations in the area, which are to say that we have standards but not enabling policy, and that the standards aren't actionable in practice. So our recommendation generally is to firm out the policy and make sure that the standards are applicable in practice.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. That's
yep.
good.
Okay, other comments, questions, suggestions for recommendations 25, 26, 27, 28? All right, seeing none, let's go ahead and vote on these last four recommendations. All those in favor, recommendation 25 through 28, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right. So let me thank Arian and John and your entire task force with what has been a monumental task to get through all of these recommendations. Thank you for formulating them. Thank you for presenting them. And
thank
I think
so
at
much.
This point we'll move on to our updates. And our first update will come from the USCDI Interoperability Task Force, Christina and Terry.
Great, thanks. Robert, I know we're a little behind on time. I don't know how much time we need to leave for the ISP task force, but feel free to move me along if we need to. If
okay.
we could go on to the next slide. So today we're going to go through our draft recommendations of where we are with the task force and give an update to the group. Just in general, we're very pleased with the draft that ONC has put forward. As we were going through our recommendations, we started generating a lot of questions, and we've gotten guidance from ONC that we should start to try to answer those questions instead of just saying providing more clarity. So I would like the task force where we, or the HITAC, to look at areas that we've provided recommendations where we want more clarity to start thinking through that. So just keep that in mind as we go through. Another overarching thing is that we've identified that we really don't want to just create a model in the USCDI that simply classifies data elements, but really look at creating a model that facilitates the progression of the data elements through the process. So with that, we are going to go through the promotion model guidelines first, and then move on to the lifecycle and submission information. So with the guidelines here on the screen, what you'll see is the actual USCDI guidelines that are actual text in the draft. We thought it was worth going through this just as kind of an introduction to get the group thinking. So just at the beginning, any individual or an entity may submit a data element into the process or contribute a data element. Stakeholders will submit data elements for consideration as part of the USCDI promotion model. Under that, a data element with multiple data elements may be submitted, but constituent data elements will be individually evaluated for placement and advancement. Data elements may have, or data classes may have data elements at different levels of classification, and a single data element may be a data class in name as well. So the data element information submitted for entry in the USCDI promotion process will determine whether the data element is classified as level one or level two. We are recommending to put a new classification, and this is later on our recommendations as well. As I go through this, anything in red is additional language from the task force. So we are proposing that the current comments that are submitted but not reviewed are labeled as unclassified. And then once they are reviewed by ONC, and do not go into level one or level two, they are classified as proposed. So moving on to the next slide. No data element can proceed directly into the USCDI. This is for transparency purposes. And the USCDI promotion guidelines and criteria will be transparent to the public. So if we could move on to the next slide. On this, we're moving to the promotion MITRE life cycle. So for the guidelines, we do plan to go back and provide more recommendations at the end. But where we are now is the promotion model lifecycle. So just a review, again, the edits that we've made are in red. I'll try to go through this relatively quickly, but a submission cycle begins when ONC announces a new version of the USCDI. Submission cycles end at the end of the calendar year. Submitted data elements exist as comments. Kind of went through this. Proposed data elements will be removed if not classified into level one or level two. Once classified into level one or level two by ONC, a data element has up to three submission cycles. I'm going to go on to the next slide. If a data element is removed due to lack of progress, it will be archived. And after a data element's level classification has been published, a submitter may request information. If we go on to the next slide, I move through that quickly because in our recommendations, we pulled the language again, so we'll be able to reference it through our recommendations, and that's just the overview we went through just now. So for the submission cycles and entering as comments, this is our formal recommendation as it stands. The task force supports the concept that anyone can submit a data element via an open comment process. The task force suggests that data elements submitted for review currently labeled as comments become proposed data elements once reviewed until classified as level one or level two.
And Christina, just let me interrupt for just a minute. Just to be clear, what we're doing here is updating the committee on your task force's work. Your task force has formulated some initial recommendations here, but at this time, we're not voting on any specific actions. We're not taking any specific actions as a committee. We're taking these proposed recommendations as an update of your committee's work, your task force's work, just to be clear for everybody.
That's correct. And with the two areas that we provided recommendations in this presentation are around the life cycle and the data element submission information. I think we're at a point now where we have contributed as a task force and the recommendations are as they stand, and we're ready to move on to the next section. So we would really like feedback from the full committee today on these first two sections because we are planning to move forward, and we'll revisit them at the end, but are kind of putting them on the shelf a little bit for now.
Yep, great. Yeah, so we will be looking for input from the entire committee on your task force's work here.
Well, this is Clement, and I don't really have specific comments on this, but sort of a question to Ankh, that is, so will it be some kind of notice of what's already in, you know, the guidance, and that is so that what I'm worried about is laboratories already in there, and so then is Ankh going to get peppered by individual lab test requests from companies that they want it to be specifically cited in the USCDI? Or will it be something that's already covered? Maybe that's too big a question.
Clem, it sounds like you're asking a question specifically of the Office of National Coordinator.
Well, yeah, how are they going to filter, how are they going to keep from getting barraged by stuff that, yes, maybe it's not appropriate for now.
Well, no, it's fine. I guess what I'll do is I'll allow them to formulate their response, but let's move on with the discussion and presentation of the promotion model lifestyle cycle, and then I'll allow ONC to come back in.
Okay.
All right, Christine, you want to proceed?
Yep, I think we can move to the next slide. Okay, so this is around the data elements that are not classified as level one or level two, have three submission cycles from the ONC final decision period to remain at the comment level before they are removed. And we did want some clarity on how proposals should be modified, updated, or resubmitted. And we've got some later comments in here around the, or recommendations around the data elements being removed or whether they should be archived and what that looks like. So if you don't mind, I'd like to go through the four slides and then come back to this. So next slide, please.
Sure.
Okay. So our next recommendation is to put a process in place to group and or merge related data elements and when possible, tag data elements as belonging to a data class that already exists in the USCDI and or is part of a newly proposed data element or data class, sorry. One thing that we wanted to note is that the USCDI process operates at the level of the data element and not the data class, but data classes may advance to incorporate more data elements and new data classes can emerge through this process. Our next recommendation, if we could go back one more slide, is around the actual removal process. And this was what I was alluding to before on this recommendation. So our recommendation here is that a data elements are listed as proposed when ONC determines that they are not level one or level two, but data elements may be marked or tagged as inactive after a five-year period with a question mark beside it, but should remain in the proposed category. We're kind of looking for a balance here on what becomes too cluttered in that proposed and when it should be archived, and then when it's archived, we don't want data elements to get lost in kind of a closet of cobwebs. So Clem, this kind of goes in line with what you were asking your question to ONC on how much is should be in there or not. So it would be great to get some feedback on this. Then our next recommendation is that data elements in the proposed category should be grouped into data classes when possible. So we just want transparency around where they live in the broader data class ecosystem. So moving on to the next slide. The final recommendation in the lifecycle is that this should be public so that all interested stakeholders understand the classification decision and include kind of a grading criteria that led to that decision as well as justification and any exchanges that happened between the submitter and ONC. So I will pause there.
Well, this is Clem again. So I worry about this, I don't disagree with anybody. I worry about this having to deal at the element level always. And then I worry about then if the people who submit need to get debriefed per element, because there are possibly tens of thousands of elements people could, this could be like a denial of access in internet if they throw enough stuff at ONC. So I just think we got to be careful about having such broad requirements on ONC when we can get down to these tiny little pieces that could be part of, you know, any particular category of testing.
Clem, do you think that the recommendation to group and tag into the data classes helps with that?
Well, I mean, the wording says that the decisions are made at the element rather than the class. is a little bit of a worry. It's a challenge. I don't know. I don't have good counter suggestion, but I just worry about the ability to absorb, especially if an industry wants to get busy, you know, and keep on, busy. You could make up hundreds of elements or thousands of elements. You know, there's at least 40,000 lab tests already, and are they going to have to deal with every lab test, the new vendor that comes up with a new product, or will that be subsumed, under labs?
Yeah. So just to keep the discussion moving, I think the way I'd like to propose we do this is that the task force on USCDI take the comments from the committee, not necessarily feel like they have to address them as they come up, but take them as input for their ongoing discussions of these issues. And also, I got a note back from ONC that particularly in this area that Clem's bringing up, that this bombardment risk, which could lead to a denial of service, is something that they will get back to Clem about rather than try to do it on this call. But I think okay. What we're trying to do is gather information from the entire committee on the task force's work to then inform the ongoing discussions of the task force. Does that seem reasonable to everybody, I hope?
Yeah.
So, okay. Other comments for the task force on these promotion lifecycle slides that Christine just presented? Okay. You want to go to the next section, Christine?
Yeah, that sounds great. So I'm not going to read through these because each of the areas is highlighted in each, but these are the fields for when a data element is submitted. These are the fields that are required for the submission process. So if we could go to the next slide, we'll start with the data element name and description. We recommended to put in proposed in here. Recommendation one under this field is that we think that ONC should review and name the description of the data elements that are submitted. This includes the review of all submitted data elements to group similar submissions and refine them as necessary prior to assigning the level. This may include refining the name and or description before a data element is assigned to a level. And this is where we're hoping to kind of consolidate a lot of similar submissions and streamline the process as much as we can. Our next recommendation is to add an additional requirement for the submitter to identify related data elements already submitted, whether proposed at level one or level two. And then our final recommendation under this section is that an optional field should be included to indicate any existing or propose a new data class for the data element. Robert, I think maybe we can keep moving along unless you see a hand up.
Yeah, I think let's go ahead and do all the data element submission ones you have here.
Okay, so moving on to the next slide. Oh, we already did. Why should a data element, the next criteria to be filled in the submission form is why should this data element be captured and available for nationwide exchange? We have added a few more examples of use cases. One of the requirements is to provide applicable use cases. And our first recommendation here is to expand that list and include all stakeholders needed to achieve the quadruple aim. As an example, public health, research, and population health. And then we are recommending to expand upon the criteria and guidelines for a submitter to provide adequate information to support the data element. So moving on to the next slide. When asked if systems currently capture the submitted data element, we are recommending to also include details of the structured data, capture of data that exists. When asked if standards exist that represent the data element, we are recommending that any standards that exist be pointed to in the ISAF. There's no recommendations under the description of any connectathons pilots or production use of the data element. And then for any additional information, we are recommending that a field also be included to include letters of support and or a method to endorse data elements that have already been submitted. We can move on to the next slide.
So I think this is a good place to just take a pause to see if there are any comments or suggestions or input to the task force on the topic of data element submission information.
Well, I'll just repeat my worry about the elemental size. You know, there's 14,000 drugs. You know, you can take any areas. You get devices. There's probably a million. And so at the element level, I think we've got to worry. I think we've got to find a way to lump them up a bit.
Okay. Other comments or questions for the task force? All right, Christina, you want to go on to the next section?
Great, thanks. I'm going to pass it to Terry.
Okay, thanks. Just really two issues that have been raised in the task force but not really widely discussed, but we want to bring them up today to put them in front of the committee for any additional thoughts or input. And it's really sort of the what, how, and why we're raising this. So the first issue is around a sort of a national health information strategy. So we're thinking USCDI looks a lot like a market-driven process right now, where data elements are proposed and then advanced, largely driven by those with most experience in moving data elements through standardization and testing. And the concern is there may be data elements that and data classes that aren't really amenable to that process. And so we will be discussing this issue further in the task force. But the question for the committee to consider, and there's one more slide on this, is this an issue that's worth pursuing? You know, has it already been solved and we don't know about it? So that would be one set of questions. If we can go on to the next slide, please. This breaks it down a little bit more. We're trying to think of sort of functions in the process of advancing data elements through USCDI. we're not proposing a mechanism, and we're not proposing a structure, but the thoughts, and these have been raised in the committee, is sort of where, how do we get these sort of functions into the process in a way that, first of all, doesn't clutter it up and make it more onerous, but also helps us meet the strategic needs that data and specific data elements are going to play in getting to the quadruple aim. So I'm going to let you guys read this slide rather than me. I think the overriding concern is that we think that you need both a strategic approach to identifying data elements as well as a market approach. They're both important. They both contribute significant value, but I'm not sure that either one is sufficient by itself. So that's sort of a set of questions for the and ask Robert if we could just ask for some comments or observations or anything at this point.
Sure. Yep. So we're taking input now to these two areas that Terry just covered. And actually, Terry, you have one last one, right?
Yeah, that's the data promotion model itself.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So let's talk about these gaps and these missing functions that Terry has proposed. Any input for the task force from the committee?
Well, this is Clint again. I have, so I think market may be too narrow. I mean, it's market and the public. I mean, it's wide open. And I think if we describe some other force as strategic, who really controls that? Is that going to be a secret hand? I just worry about having special categories. How would you choose that? You know, it's just like it's as open as it can be now, isn't it, or not?
So, Clem, thanks for the comments. No, you're absolutely right. I think it is a balance. And the question is, you know, is the process sufficiently open now to make sure the data elements that have that will help us get to the quadruple aim, but maybe, as we put in the last bullet, maybe orphaned in the sense that there's not enough of a market in uptake to push them forward. But if they've been identified as part of a broader strategy, then you need a strategy to move them forward, in addition to supplement what the market's doing. I think that's
if we ought to add then one more thing is who's supposed to collect it and put it in? You know, is this just a way for one group to say, do work for me by another group?
You know, well, I guess the question I would turn back is there a national data strategy? Is there a group that's looked at the data needs across government, private?
Yeah, there, as I mentioned in the previous one, there is, and in fact, it met coincidentally with this meeting, so I couldn't be on it today. So there is a federal task force, information system task force, IT task force, that's trying to orchestrate a strategic plan, but it's very, very early.
I think it's good to take this input, not necessarily to address it here today, because I don't know that we've got enough time to address every comment, but I want to make sure that we get maximal opportunity for the committee to give input to your task force, to Christine and Terry. So other comments from the committee to help the discussions at the task force? All right, seeing none, Terry, why don't you wrap up with your last section?
Sure. So the sort of the meat of the work that we're going to have to do going forward is to figure out what the promotion criteria are, and ONC has provided a really nice outline. And again, like all of this, to Clem's point, it's a balance, you know, between making sure that the data elements have gotten the technical specificity that they need to actually be interoperable and broadly deployed, and on the other hand, not making the process so onerous that it gets in the way of moving them forward. I think this was a comment made last year about, well, there are too many stages. So now there are fewer stages, but I have a feeling that the criteria are going to be similar. You're still going to have to go through a series of gates, and the question is, you know, how do we make those gates efficient and not obstructive? And that's all we're going to say. But this is where the task force is going in the next couple of months. And that's it, Robert. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the update. Before I recognize Steve, any other comments or input for the task force from the HITACH? They're telling you sort of where they're planning to go next, and they're looking for input. So this is an opportunity for the committee to give input to that. And at the current time, I don't see anybody from the committee with a hand up. I'll recognize Steve from ONC.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Robert. I just wanted to express our thanks to Terry and Christina for tackling what they have thus far. And I think you all have been exposed today to some of the broader, let's say, next decade challenges as we look to advance the US CDI. It's interesting to juxtapose the challenges that they've raised through their initial presentation here with recommendation 3 from the TEFCO work to focus on the rapid yet prudent expansion of the US CDI. So a lot of the work that they're doing right now in wrestling with the promotion model is to figure out how to address effectively recommendation 3 from the other task force and the struggles that are involved in making sure that there is an open, you know, deliberate process that leads to greater transparency for all the stakeholders, but is something that reasonably everybody can participate in, which is, you know, part of those last couple of slides. So I just wanted to express our thanks, and, you know, they've really taken it to the next level in terms of moving the draft forward that we provided.
Right. Thanks. Other comments from the committee for the USCDI task force? All right. So as you all have noted in the agenda, we do have a commitment to the public to allow them to have their public comment period at 12:15, which is in 5 minutes. What I'd like to do is start on the next section to provide an overview of their work, and then we'll solicit input on the interoperability standards priority task force. And if the public comment period allows us enough time, we'll come back to that. But Ken and Stephen, if you can go ahead and get started on your section, and we'll take a hard break at 12:15 to allow public comment.
Sure, we can certainly get started. Thank you so much, Robert. Thank you for the opportunity to provide an update on the work of the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. Our task force took a bit of a hiatus during the period of time that we were all focusing in on the proposed rules, but have been back at work for the last month or so. You will recall that our charge is to make recommendations on priority uses of HIT and the associated standards and implementation specifications that support such uses. And we are nearing the end of our term of service and getting ready to work on finalizing our recommendations and preparing a report that we hope to bring back to all of you in the fall. The next slide shows the task force members, just as a reminder, and I really want to thank both the HITECH members and the members of the public who have been participating in this. It's really been a great process. On the next slide, well, first, just a reminder that our task force has brought back to the HITECH prior recommendations related to orders and results, as well as referrals and care coordination. Our third major topic area was to dive into the data standards and implementation related to medications and pharmacy data. And we have had a number of meetings. We've invited a number of subject matter experts, both from industry and the not-for-profit world. And we've identified really the core subdomains where we feel that we have the opportunity to provide specific recommendations. So today we're not going to be going through the recommendations in detail because I don't think that they're quite ready for that, but rather just identifying the subdomains that we're digging into. So we'll take these last couple of minutes before the public comment to just cover what those subdomains are. And then we're hoping at the end to highlight some particular ones where we wanted to get input from the committee. But essentially, we broke the subdomains related to medication and pharmacy data into priority one and priority two items. And these are in no particular order, though we have discussed the importance of being able for prescribers and others, including individuals, to get data about the dispensing of medications and their administration, for the importance of being able to get information about eligibility for payment and formulary checking, accessing information about alternative therapies, both pharmaceutical and non-pharmaceutical, the critical importance of real price data transparency as it relates to medications. With regard to this, the importance of electronic prior authorization transactions for medications covered under the prescription benefit. We have some specific recommendations we're going to be offering specific to electronic prescribing of controlled substances, which is now live in production, but has not been fully embraced across the care spectrum. We've spent some significant time talking about the value of discrete structured medication SIGs, and we will have some specific recommendations about the support for those, as well as the challenges of medication reconciliation. On the next slide, just very briefly, I'll just
Hey, Stephen,
display.
Why don't we, yeah? Steve, Why don't we just take a break here before you go on to...
Just display this, that's all. Just 30 seconds to see the list, and then we'll go to public comments.
Yeah, they're gonna override the slide with a public comment slide. So.
That's fine. Anyways. Go right ahead.
Yeah, but thank you for that. And we're not stopping here. We're just taking a pause. So let's go ahead, and I'm going to turn it back over to Lauren to run the public comment process. But we are at our appropriate time to allow public comments.
Sure. Thanks, Robert. And operator, can we open the line, please?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments in the queue.
Okay, Robert, we may just circle back if folks are taking a couple minutes to dial in, but if we get any comments on the phone, I'll let you know.
Great, thank you. So, yeah, the comment period will remain open, and so people can go ahead and dial in. And if we can put the slides back to, yes, exactly. And so, Stephen, why don't you go ahead and continue on your discussion?
Actually, I'll let Ken take it from here.
Sure. So what we have here is some of our other, what we consider priority 2 recommendations, and then we have some specific issues we want to get feedback on. With regard to our secondary priorities, the primary ones included things like price transparency and such. These include the ability to transfer prescriptions across pharmacies, et cetera. Having standard ways to access a PDMP, prescription drug monitoring program data, issues with costs associated with accessing PDMP data and taking advantage of things like, issues with cost to access PDMP data and bring that down, perhaps leveraging some ongoing work that ONC is working on. More standard ways of detecting and reporting adverse drug events through available data. Rx norm code availability and use. So this includes some minor things, including API availability of past archived Rx norm codes, which currently is not available. Through API and also through the National Library of Medicine's resource there that they're aware of and I think we'll be able to fix. And use of Rx norm codes, particularly where NDC codes are more prevalent with regard to dispense medications. There's a number of issues there, for example, for estimating price when those transactions tend to be done at a level of the NDC. Another issue is regard to electronic prior authorizations where prescriptions that are considered a medical rather than a pharmacy benefit has much less infrastructure and standards around it. And also arising from acknowledgement that NCPDP standards are not publicly available, this turned into a larger issue of should there be public access to standards required by federal programs and we believe they should be available, that if we're going to require them, they should not be behind a paywall. And also related to that, that we shouldn't create perverse incentives by making, penalizing groups that have decided to make their standards open, such as HL7, and broadly support the developers of standards that are required by federal programs. Next slide, please. And maybe, Stephen, you can walk us through this.
Sure. So we wanted to pull out a few of the key recommendations that we are looking at and just highlight them to have the opportunity for any input from the committee. But really, on the whole, our interest is in getting your input as to whether the items that we've identified are appropriate for the input of the task force. Whether there are some key ones that you feel are missing or some that we waded into that perhaps people have concerns about. But these are some that we thought we were getting ready to bring forward, specifically the concept of incentivizing and or requiring payers and PBMs to make real-time prescription benefit information available so that systems can calculate and present the true out-of-pocket cost data both to prescribers and patients in real time. This has been identified by a number of commenters as a real opportunity. Clearly, some payers and PBMs make this data available, not all do. The data is not fully integrated into workflows today, and it seems that there's an opportunity to really incentivize this and add value to the medication prescribing process. Similarly, the notion of freely sharing prior authorization requirements, again, from the payers, incentivizing the free sharing of that data, making that available both to providers and to patients, individuals, so that they can utilize apps to prepare for and manage through the prior authorization process. So we want to make this data available. The third one here, encouraging or incentivizing or requiring potentially prescriber adoption of EPCS for all controlled substance prescriptions. Clearly, this is a key component in our efforts to quell the opioid crisis. It's been shown clearly that using e-prescribing is very valuable, and there are a number of opportunities for us to close the gap so that all or nearly all controlled substances are e-prescribed. And then, as Ken mentioned, this notion of the public availability of standards that are required by certification criteria and other federal programs. This is a gap that's been identified. Sometimes the standards are made public only during a public comment period, and then they go back behind a paywall, and that just didn't make sense to our task force. So these are some key issues we'd love to hear comments on from the committee or others that we've mentioned. There's priority one and priority two.
All right. Great. Thanks to both you and Stephen. Let's go ahead and take any time for the committee to give comments and input to the task force. Any questions for them as well?
Well, if no one else does, I have a comment, but I'll wait a bit more.
No, sure. Go ahead and Clint.
Okay. So
there's no one raising their hand.
It's a well thought through and very meticulously specified set of suggestions, which I think are almost all excellent. The one I do not agree with, as it's stated anyway, is the one about the structured SIGs, and I don't think it's given enough thought. Firstly, we didn't have access to the NCPDP proposal for that to know what we're really talking about. Secondly, from my experience working with physicians in order entry, having to click through, these are only relevant to the complicated prescriptions, which represent about 2 or 3% of all the prescriptions written, like declining doses. They are very hard to enter in a structured format. It's a lot of clicks for physicians. They're quite easy for the hospital to set up templated text that explains it all, and that doesn't make more work for physicians, it does make more work for pharmacy to translate them into their internal system. So I think we should give it more thought and not make it a first priority.
And maybe if I could comment, Clem, on that.
Ken, if I could, just I'd like to get as much input as we can from the committee to the task force. I don't want to cut them short, so I don't think we ought to try to address each comment. Let's just take it as input for right now. If you have a clarifying question for the comment, then we can do that. But I don't want to try to get back and forth where we're trying to address each comment.
Sure. Just to be very quick, Clem, if you look at the detailed recommendations, what you mentioned is all captured and addressed.
Okay. Good.
Carolyn, I would like to recognize you.
Hey, thanks, Robert. If we could see the previous slide again, please. Thank you. On that fourth bullet point, support public availability of health IT standards required by EHR certification criteria and other federal programs. I think that is a great path to go down and look at fleshing that out and getting more around that. Just in our own deliberations, a number of times we've had discussion points come up where there's the issue of standards versus policy and how they fit together and our inability to address things that are of interest and importance to the HITACH because one or another is not in place. I know certainly in some work I've done with groups looking at numeracy and health literacy of information that patients and consumers get from the EHR, you know, as delivered under regulation, it's difficult for people to understand how to improve the quality of that information so that it's more useful and more usable. I mean, it's great to get that health information, but if it's not in a manner that you can understand it, it's not helpful to you. I think if we can clarify for the public and make it more relevant, health IT standards, that could help groups that are interested in enhancements and improvements to patient and health information. Thanks.
Great. Other comments from the committee to provide input to the task force's work? Okay. Lauren, I believe there is no public comments in the queue.
Well, just one other comment, Robert, from the task force, and that is as we formulate our final recommendations in this area of medications and pharmacy data, we want to be sure that we get broad input. I don't know that we're going to have another chance to bring the detailed recommendations back to HITACH for consideration. We may yet. But if there are individuals on the committee who are not actively involved in the task force and feel that you have thoughts or domain expertise in any of this area and you'd like us to include you in the review of the detailed recommendations, please just reach out to Ken or myself and we will do that.
Right. Okay. Ken, any other comments from you?
Thank you.
Okay, great. Lauren, let me just verify that there are no public comments.
Nope, there are no comments in the queue.
Okay. Well, folks, we're approaching the end of our allotted time for the meeting. Let me just certainly thank all of our co-chairs. As we heard before, John and Arian, you ran through a very detailed set of recommendations from the TEFCA, and thank you to your task force. Christina and Terry, thank you for your work on the U.S. CDI interoperability task force and your task force as well. And Ken and Stephen, thank you for wrapping us up with your presentation on the interoperability standards by your task force. And thank you to both you and your task force for all the hard work you're doing. As my final comments, I'll just say thank you to the HITACH. Again, as we said earlier, this is a summer intervention that we had to have because of our need to get back to the ONC with our HITACH comments, which we have done today in approving the TEFCA recommendations. Transmittal letter will be formulated, and Carolyn and I will send that transmittal letter to ONC on behalf of the entire committee, as we did in the other proposed rule for interoperability. And we're looking forward to our next meeting, which is in person. And so we'll be sending out some notes for that. Please be looking for batches before that happens. And with that, I'll turn it over to Carolyn and wish you all a great rest of the summer, and we'll see you in the fall. Carolyn?
Thanks, Robert. And again, my thanks to everyone for making time in your summer schedule to attend the meeting, to my co-members on the TEFCA task force for all the work that we did in being able to bring these recommendations forward, and for Robert and I to be able to transmit those to ONC. I really look forward to seeing everyone in September. And I'll now pass the mic to Lauren.
Okay, thanks everyone. So just, yeah, as a reminder, it's September 17th. That's actually in person here in D.C. And just a couple other reminders. Our next USCDI call is tomorrow, July 12th. Next week, our annual report work group is meeting on the 19th, and also the ISP task force is meeting again on the 23rd. Again, everything is also on healthit.gov, including the materials for today's call. So with that, we will adjourn, and thanks again, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, Rob.